sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The polar vortex is making headlines again. Natural gas skyrockets on the cold weather. And we have lots to talk about: earnings, markets, and our special guest, information you need to hear with Frank Curzio. All this and much more on episode number 387 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, it's Andrew Horowitz, and it is the end of the first week of November 2014. And we have a market that continues to want to go higher, and it is making new highs. Matter of fact, we saw records once again. There were some things in the markets that were concerning, some information on China. And of course, we know that Europe is still having all sorts of difficulties. There is an overheating that is obviously apparent in the markets right now. We saw some dips in the week and then some recoveries. One of the things that we saw that was very interesting, actually, was that gold just launched on Friday. There was an amazing move on gold and silver, and the gold miners, they took off as well. One of the reasons was that the jobs number that came out, although it was 5.8% on the unemployment rate, it missed ever so slightly on the new jobs added. I didn't see any real problem there. One of the big things that was very interesting to note was that we saw a tick higher of the labor participation rate, which is good. So in fact, you would have thought that with a move higher on the labor participation rate and a move lower on the unemployment rate, that you would have seen the dollar still move higher, but the dollar actually came in lower. I think there was a lot of shorts on the side of the euro and on the yen, and it was just time to take some of the profits off the table once the news about the unemployment was out. It wasn't like a 300 or 400,000 number that was added, and maybe there was some anticipation that would be just an absolute blowout number after we saw the initial claims over the last few weeks under 300,000, and actually, I think it was 277 on Thursday. Manufacturing has been, you know, hit or miss right now. There was a couple of things that showed that possibly the GDP number will be knocked down ever so slightly due to some of the factory and manufacturing gauges in the U.S. And of course, with the dollar being so high recently, we are going to be seeing some concern over exports. As a matter of fact, we saw that number come out in terms of the trade deficit last week, and clearly the dollar has been having some kind of impact on that. But we could talk about a lot of things. Clearly, the earnings on Pollo Loco, they just made their number. It was interesting, the stock was down about 5 or 6%, and then a couple of guys on CNBC started talking about, oh, we're buying into this, which they always do. And the stock rallied throughout the day on Friday after the earnings came out the night before, but it did fade and lower at the end. I will tell you, though, I've been talking about the gold, and I mentioned last week that if there is anything out there that would move the dollar down ever so slightly, that we'd see gold and oil move higher, and it did finally. We had an option on the GDX, which is the gold miners. That was up last week something like 150% or so. That really paid off very nicely for our portfolios, and the GDX was up about 8.5% on Friday itself. So there was a lot of pent-up demand in the buying and seller exhaustion that showed up in that sector, and it really moved up, as did the oil services index as well. Well, natural gas also moved higher. There's some talk about this cold weather and another polar vortex possibly going to be coming into play. I don't know if it's possible that we're going to see the same thing this year that we saw last year, but it will be interesting nonetheless. So watch natural gas, watch the weather, watch the talk about how that will probably be the next thing again to be blamed if any of the retailers that are coming out shortly will start seeing some expectations of lower sales. I think they're a little bit ahead of themselves if anybody looks to blame the weather at this point, because it's just beautiful weather, even though it's cold. It's just a quick snap cold front that passed through. Nothing really sustained at this point, but we'll watch that. We'll watch for the trickiness in the retail numbers that will be coming out. We do have Frank Curzio. A lot of you have been writing me about what's going on with Frank. A lot of things have been going on with Frank and his company, and I think we're going to have some of those questions answered today. By the way, if you want to write me at any time, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I want your comments. Please do me a favor. Just take a second and give me your comments on what you thought about Stocktoberfest. If you haven't seen that, we did that all last month in October. We took a look at a variety of stocks, about 40 or 50 different stocks, and put those on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can go to the link where on the right bottom. It says Stocktoberfest 2014. Click on there and check out all the stocks. Let me know what you thought about the format, the information that we provided, and the overall grading and scoring of stocks with their F score and their T score. And you'll find out more about that if you check that out. And finally, if you're interested in Arrow, which is our algorithmic trading strategy that we use for portfolios, you could always go to the Disciplined Investor, check that out, get more information on that, or the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. That's all there, and the global strategies. Everything is on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Well, I know that I have a lot of questions for Frank, and I know that usually when Frank comes on, we spend a lot of time talking, so I thought we'd cut the front end of this short today and bring on Frank and find out what he has to say. What do you think? And I got a lot of questions to ask Frank because I got some, I'll call it confusing emails, and I want to know more about it. Frank, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, man. What's going on?
What's going on? What's going on? I got some emails saying, you know, that you're not with Stansberry. And I said, no, that can't be the case. And I don't know. And I called you. I said, Frank, we got to get on the phone and tell people, because I know I got a lot of emails from people saying, where's Frank? What's going on? I see some confused things. So I think it's time for you to lay it out here.
Yeah, I think I'm laying it out on your podcast first. How about that? You got the exclusive on little Frank Hersey. Look at that. But yep. A lot of big changes at Stansberry, and they decided to let me go. So, which was a business decision. It wasn't personal. It was a direction that they're looking to take 10 years from now. Doesn't include small mid-cap stocks, which was both of my newsletters focused on. And they were like, look, we're going to just go a different direction. And, you know, kind of a quick decision. Wasn't really any talk about it or I had say on it or anything like that. But with that said, I respect these guys a lot. I like them a lot. I consider a lot of those people their family. So, you know, a couple of people are really ticked off already and, you know, word's gotten out. Look, they're a great organization over there at Stansberry. And plus, we got some interesting things with the podcast as well, because I'm going to start a new podcast. Mm. I'm going to do the farewell podcast for Stansberry. I'm still going to have my new podcast on their network, which is really cool. So I'm still able to reach out to a lot of people. So we worked out a lot of things where it's a pretty good relationship, but everything's going to be owned by me. And my new podcast coming out Wednesday is going to be called Wall Street Unplugged. And it's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. And again, I'm going to be on the last podcast coming up, and I believe it's going to be published on Wednesday. Even on that Wednesday, my new podcast is going to come out. And then I'll get into more details of this story, but that's the gist of it. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. I didn't want to get, you know, too much into it, but I'll explain everything what happened on my new podcast, Wall Street Unplugged, which is going to be available Wednesday. So hopefully all you guys go there and check me out.
Well, make sure to put all the information on our site. We'll have more information coming on that too as well.
Thanks,
and that kind of it folds right in. I have a podcast called DH Unplugged, Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged. And the whole idea of an unplugged is, you know, to get rid of the BS and all the stuff that you usually hear from the talking heads.
Exactly.
Which I'm sure that's what you're talking about as well. And kind of as you open your a lot of your podcasts, I think Back to the Street was, you know, where we cut through the noise, you know what I mean? And that's what we try to do here as well. You and I, when we talk, we try to cut through all the noise and cut through all the things that you see, because you know, you see on the financial media all the discussion about, we're being constructive on stocks, no matter what, right? You know, we're constructive on that name.
Yeah, it's funny because, there's so many things, and this is why I'm so excited to do my own podcast. And, you know, it's going to be, you're going to have more rants. You're going to have, it's going to be the same format that everybody likes, though. It's going to be educational segments. I'm going to be interviewing some of the top people in the business, including you. And but that's the thing too. You know, we want to look behind the business of what's really going on and the motives behind it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that people don't understand in the markets that really influence people's decisions and why people are recommending stocks. I mean, you're looking at a Sears. You know, like people are like, oh, you know, I hate Sears and it's up 40% today. Why is it up so much? 40%? Because.
Of Lambert. Lambert's doing some shenanigans behind the deal, and who knows if it's, you know, he's done this many different times. Looks like the company's possibly going private. The fact of the matter is it's going to hold. We don't know. But also, let's kind of look at something we took a short position in Pollo Loco right before the earnings came out, looking at the Chipotle earnings, saying, hey, you know what? It was a little bit, you know, a little weak. Their outlook on same store sales was very weak, low single digits, even though their earnings came out okay, but their outlook was weak. And I'm thinking, you know what? Pollo Loco has been said to be the next Chipotle. That's what they're modeling this after. For whatever reason, it's really not the same company. It's not the same deal. They're second in market in terms – well, not even second. They're probably like 25th in market for what this is. And how many Mexican chicken places can you have these days? But the fact of the matter is that we said, you know, we'll take a short position, nothing major in this. And the stock, by the way, they met expectations. Okay, that's good. But the problem is – that a stock like that, that's such a high flyer, which is a high PE, maybe with a good future, is not supposed to just meet. They should exceed significantly. That's almost like a miss. You know, these days where there's so much management and massaging of earnings with analysts, that's a miss. Stock's down, whatever, 5.5%, holding on its support line really well. The big question is, why is it holding? Why isn't this thing just crashing down, you know, 20%? If they didn't meet their numbers? Well, the fact is, behind the scenes, there's a lot of technicals going on. You still have a fresh company that a lot of the still a lot of big holdings by the syndicates that put this thing out. And, you know, if you remember back with any of the IPOs that we've seen in the past, they hold on till maybe there's some kind of insider availability to unlock their positions and the lockup expiration. And then all of a sudden you see this thing tank. But anyway, just a long way around talking about some of the things that are going on that maybe are underlying some of the issues. For example, you know, you look at, you know, like Japan. When their yen, their mm-hmm. currency, moves higher in value, it just destroys their stock market, right? Why? Yep. They have a lot of exports, you know? Meanwhile, in the U.S., when the dollar comes down, that's said to be a good thing. When the dollar goes up, that's said to be a good thing. Now, I always wondered, how can you have both? It's kind of nutty.
It is kind of nutty, but and again, looking at the underlying factors, and this is why I've been bullish for the last 3 years, and it's been tested when small caps really got hit hard and corrected not long ago, a couple months ago. But conditions are different when we have a low interest rate environment like we have here. The whole world is looking to invest. They have to invest their money, or even sovereign wealth funds, and where they're going to invest, they're going to invest in the best place in the world. And today that happens to be the U.S. Is it great? No, it's not great, but it's 10 times better than anything else out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're seeing a lot of money come into this market. You're seeing a perfect environment for stocks. Not only do you have low interest rates, but you have an economy that's not doing too good and not doing too good, not doing too bad. So at both sides, you have arguments. You know, the unemployment rate, you could say the labor participation rate, that's why it's so good, whatever it is. And then you look at corporate earnings, and they're the highest they've been in 7 years. You're looking at low interest rates, which is still fueling housing, and housing is coming down. But still, you know, houses are affordable now, and it makes sense. I mean, there's things driving this economy of manufacturing, retail, and the amount of money on the balance sheets of these corporations, there's a lot of positives and a lot of negatives. And guys, that's the perfect environment. You don't want the stock market overheating, and you don't want to see a deflationary environment. And we're not seeing that, which is providing actually a perfect environment where, okay, you know, the Fed's looking at going, well, we really don't have to do nothing. We don't have to do nothing. And next thing you know, another 3 years is going to go by, and they're going to say, well, we really don't have to do anything. And as stocks are going higher, remember the key component to that is earnings are going higher as well. We're trading at 17 times earnings today. In January 2013, we were trading at 17 times earnings. And the mm-hmm. stock market's up, what, 30%?
Yeah.
So the earnings are following right now. When the earnings don't follow, you have to worry. But even this earnings season so far has been pretty good again. I mean, we keep saying that after earnings season. As long as we have that and these companies are following up on earnings and don't pay attention to how those earnings are coming because it doesn't matter. We looked at this argument. I mean, how many times, Andrew, have we talked about the quality of earnings?
Oh, the quality of earnings is awful.
It's awful, but it doesn't matter because you're seeing stocks go higher. So, you know, that as an analyst, it's something that I was looking at. I'm like, you know what? It's wrong. The market's not looking at the quality of earnings. They're looking at earnings, and earnings are there. These companies are able to pay their dividends. People need yield. So you're seeing these large companies continue to do well, and it's fueling an environment that makes it healthy for stocks. So as long as we have this environment, I think it's going to continue. As long as those earnings continue to come in strong, which they are, and we have a low interest rate environment, these are trends that I see for at least the next couple of years. I think you have to be invested in the stock market right now.
Now, I would tend to agree with you. One of the things, just to get back on the earnings quality for a second, is that you said something that's really interesting. You said that as long as companies get their earnings, no matter how they get there, right? So as a great example is IBM. IBM, we know the quality of the earnings are probably the poster child for crap. I mean, you know, we're talking about selling off a company where they paid to actually sell off the company of $1.5 billion and $1.3 billion, okay? Why? Who knows? You know, listen, they sold off Lenovo years ago. Lenovo's the price is at the lowest it's been however long with its recent earnings in the last couple of days, which is just abysmal. Fortunately, they sold that off. So they sell that off. But what they do is they go out and they can finance all sorts of debt at a very low rate. And what do they do with that money? Well, they do buybacks. And AutoNation, as an example, Mike Jackson came on CNBC a couple of weeks back and talked about their earnings that were great earnings and all. But they talked about how the company bought back 8% of the outstanding shares in 2014 alone. That's an extraordinary amount. That's halfway to privatization in a way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's still full, but it's an enormous number. And like you said, the reason I say the quality of earnings doesn't matter is because I thought they did matter, and obviously I'm wrong because they're still reporting earnings, and that's what the market's doing. And, right. And as an analyst and even as an investor, people listening to this, don't get stubborn in your ways. If something's not working, then there's a reason why it's not working. Find out why. Where we argued this 3 years ago, we were saying, wow, look at these buybacks. Look at the quality of earnings and what's going on here. And, you know, companies are raising their dividends here, like McDonald's, and people saying, wow, you know, these are 3% yield. That's nice, where they're not looking at the underlying business and secular changes going on at McDonald's. For the average investor, you know, you and I, Andrew, we look at the markets all the time, and we're looking at quality earnings. How do you determine that? Well, a simple way is just look to see how much revenues are growing. So if you see companies that are growing revenue 1% and their earnings are up 10%, they're doing a lot of different things. Maybe it's layoffs. Maybe, you know, whatever they're doing, they're raising prices.
Yeah, cost-cutting, right. The whole,
what you'd like to see is that sales number going higher as well, because that's healthy business, and now you're seeing those margins expand, which is filtering into earnings. So that's how you tell the earnings quality sometimes, in a rough estimate. It's much more detailed than that. But I'm saying for the average investor who has a different job outside the market, if you just see a company where its revenues are growing 1%, but yet the business is growing, the earnings are growing 10%, there's something going on with the earnings. It's not being manipulated, but they're just finding ways to buy back stock, to just increase those earnings somehow. And, you know, outside, there are a lot of great companies that are seeing revenue growth right now. So, you know, it depends how you want to look at it. But this is a market where it's going to come down to stock selection now. You know, I've seen the small cap market. It wasn't like that the last couple of years. You can just close your eyes and buy whatever you want. It's a lot different now. I think now it's going to come down to, you know, I'm seeing stocks getting hit 20, 30%. You've seen Sears, Sears up 40% at one point. Excuse me. Amazing move. Why? Because the short position is 70%. Short ratio, 70%.
Well, that's something. You know what? I don't think we've talked about that before. This is really fascinating because I had a conversation the other day with somebody and he said, hey, this stock looks like it's a real short potential. It's starting to move down, blah, blah, blah. It's short. It's got like some enormously large short. I said, wait, hold on a second. If you want to take the other side of that bet for a second, the high level of short interest in a stock, if you have a lot of shorts in there, it's kind of a very contrary indicator. Because what happens is while there's a lot of people betting against that, if there is any sign of any good news or anything at all, that stock could break. A good example is SodaStream. SodaStream is a stock I do not like. I don't like the company. I don't like the potential for the product long term. But nonetheless, the company dropped down a few days ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. It came out with some kind of announcement that they're testing something with Pepsi. The stock was up like 20% at one point that day. Okay, the fact of the matter is, what is that from? Is it because it's worth 20% more because of this Pepsi deal? No, because shorts got squeezed. There was a lot of shorts in there. Shorts got squeezed, and it popped up. Then it came right back down, by the way. But for short-term trades or for these kind of pops, a heavy short interest is actually a very contrary indicator, especially if the stock is basing and you see that there's no movement for a while. It's sitting along some line. It can't get any lower. That means shorts aren't pressing it. And if there's any hint of any kind of good news or maybe a buyback or better earnings or some kind of a deal or strategic acquisition or anything like that, the stock's going to pop like crazy. So be careful when you see a stock that has too much short interest.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. And also, I mean, Green Mountain Coffee was another company that had a huge short interest, right? And Green Mountain Coffee went right to its 52-week high, went up huge. There's a difference between Green Mountain Coffee and Sears. Green Mountain Coffee had a fundamental change. They signed a deal with Coca-Cola. That's a game breaker for the company. If you're short, you're out. You got to get out. That's a game breaker for the company. Sears is popping higher because they said they may convert some of their stores to REITs. They may do it. They may not do it. And so what I see is shorts running to the exit, and they're going to come back.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? With Green Mountain Coffee, when I saw that was a game breaking deal. It's a game changer where you're like, okay, you got to reevaluate your position now because now you have the biggest beverage company in the world investing in you. That's giving you a stamp of approval. This company's here to stay. Where Sears, you know, a lot of people are betting against it that they're going to go out of business. They're losing money. It's a terrible business model. You're probably going to see those shorts come back and create different opportunities. So, yeah, you want to look at the short ratios. And, yes, it's very dangerous because you can see price moves like this, 30, 40% in a day. But you also have to analyze the news and why they're moving and why these companies are going higher on these short squeezes. I think Sears is going to become a short. I don't know if they're going to be that easily to convert themselves over to the REIT, but we'll see over the next few months.
Now, it's interesting. You mentioned Green Mountain, and you probably heard me say this before, and my audience probably heard me say this before. They did this deal with Coke, which is interesting. And, you know, they take these machines that provide either a cold or a hot beverage and, you know, through water, and they just heat it up. I mean, very easy to do. I think the next thing they should do is do a deal with Gillette. Now, there's a lot of you wondering, what the hell am I talking about? You put a little cup with a little shaving cream, make a hot lather.
What do you think? Maybe. Maybe. I mean, listen, any guy who's listening to this, I mean, when I lived in Queens, New York, I tell you, I used to go to the barbershops just to get shaved. It was amazing.
I still do that.
I've done that in Florida.
Just go to the guy with the barber poles. I do that every time I go. I get a hot leather shave on my neck.
Oh,
and get a face.
It's the best thing sitting there. I know. Yeah.
And then think about that. Have a mini Green Mountain thing there, and they just do a deal with the Barbasol or whoever it is out there, that or Edge or whatever it is, and put a little hot lather machine, a hot lather K-cup.
Oh, that would be really cool.
How great is that, right? How great is that? All right, let's talk about some things about the markets again. First of all, I want to just focus on a couple of economic issues. We see that recently this week that the unemployment numbers were released, 5.8%. Actually, the labor participation rate ticked up, but we were a little bit short on the amount of new hires, et cetera. Okay, we see that the initial claims are coming down dramatically, 277, or the initial claims very good, under 300,000. The U.S., generally speaking, we're seeing that the productivity is up. We're seeing the work week is up. You know, we're seeing a lot of things happen in a good way in terms of employment. That's a bit of a concern. That's why the dollar's been moving higher. And, you know, we're seeing that the economy is doing better than expected, about a 3% GDP approximately. We may see some, you know, a little bit of a problem with some of the recent ISM numbers that came out and a few other things, factory orders, durable goods orders. And so, but in the end of the day, we'll call it, you know, 2.5 to 3-ish. Is GDP in the U.S., which is a lot better than has been, especially with that awful number we saw in the first quarter of this year. On the other hand, we look around the world. We see that Europe is just horrible, continues to be disgusting, deflationary environment. Mario Draghi, who I think really should be just taken out and flogged. This one central banker in particular, I think, is, if anything, I'll call him a liar. I think he is just simply off the rails. You know, now he's being called into question, and there's some, I don't want to call it competition, but it's some confusion, concern. Is they're going to see, hey, you know what, you can't just say there's unlimited and all this without votes. In Japan, we saw not only did the Kurata come out and surprise with additional stimulus, but also the pension plans are increasing their stock allocations dramatically over the next year or so, and that's a tremendous amount of money in the multi-billion dollars that's going to increase on the foreign and domestic. They do something what we don't do. Their central bank will actually sometimes go out and dictate buying of REITs and certain stocks in their own stock market to pump up their stock market. Their stock market was up, I don't know, 10% last week or something like that. China, on the other hand, is something I want to talk to you about because I sent you some articles on this. Once again, we're seeing some numbers out of China that are very concerning, in particular the export numbers. We saw this some time ago that they don't match. The exports from China to Hong Kong is an example, where the imports in Hong Kong are much lower than the export numbers that are being sent out from China, saying that, well, maybe there's some money transactions that are going unrecognized. Are you warm, cold? What's your story and what's your feeling overall on China?
We've had this conversation before, and it's funny you say that because I just spoke to a couple people on China. We were having a discussion. I would invest in American companies that have exposure to China. I think China is an amazing market. I think they need to get their act together, which it seems like from what I'm reading and from what I hear there, there's more regulation finally because I think they're starting to realize that they're going to be the biggest country in the world. Obviously, they're there in terms of population. They'll get there in GDP. They'll get there in every single number eventually. Maybe it takes 10 years, 20 years. A lot of that growth, the middle class is the size of our entire population here, which is, what is it, over 300 million?
Yep, 300 million.
So, you know, you're looking at a market that is going to be spending a lot of money, and it's going to happen in the next 5, 10, 20 years. And if you're looking at companies here, that's what they look at. That's what CEOs look at. They look at where we want to be in 10 years. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of things going on in China where you can't really trust the numbers. I wouldn't invest in it directly. I've gotten burnt. Caterpillar's gotten burnt. Had to write off an entire division that didn't exist. This is Caterpillar. We've seen some of the biggest hedge fund managers. What was it? Sinopharm or whatever that company was.
Yeah,
where
Sinopharm.
And they have a research team of like 100 and they got fooled. So, you know, when you're seeing those smart guys and those guys in the industry, I'm not the smartest guy by far. Those guys are really smart. When Caterpillar, one of the biggest industrial companies in the world, thinks they have a division in China and it doesn't exist, you got to stay out of China. Don't even go in there. If you want to invest in China, you have to have exposure. I mean, people say Yum Brands or whatever. A lot of these companies have exposure. Some of the retails, the high-end retailers have exposure. It's a massive growth market that's going through a little bit of problems now and adjustments. I think it's going to come back. Maybe GDP slows a little bit. It's still going to be above 5% for a very long time, 6%, which I think is very, very good. And you have to realize that, you know, even on the export-import side of what's going on in China, which I think a lot of people don't understand, is wages are starting to rise. So that it used to be like, let's get everything done in China, all our manufacturing in China. Now they're moving from China to maybe Vietnam, and people are saying, well, it's not really a good thing. It is a good thing because the people there are demanding more money. Their economies are getting better. It used to be the coastal economies in China that are great. It's moving more into central and to mainland where these economies are building up. So it is going to hurt in terms of their export market, but they're building up their own country now. So you know, people are making more money where you can't just, you know, manufacture things for cheap there. That's a good thing eventually. It's not really a good thing right now. So, you know, people look at the import-export numbers and they might be misguided. In terms of China, if you have a long-term outlook, and this is why Jim Rogers has been bullish forever because he has a long-term outlook, it's a place you have to be invested in. The best way to do it is by buying American companies with exposure there.
Well, give me some examples. I mean, we're talking about like an Apple. You know, I mean, obviously Apple. That's
I mean, if you're looking for examples, you could almost take the Dow Jones companies, almost every one of them. So, I mean, a lot of those companies have exposure. Maybe not every one of them, but I bet you 60, 70% of them have exposure. A lot of these S&P 500 companies have exposure there. But what's key here, too, is, you know, the tax code, what's going on. There's so much money there right now that they can't bring in because they're going to get taxed to hell on it. And they're trying to change the tax code and that brings the elections in and stuff like that. But it's going to be interesting because I don't think they'll ever change that tax code, which is going to leave money there in outside countries that's going to be forced to be invested there. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works out. But you can look at even the Caterpillars still have investments there. You're looking at Apple still has investments there. You know, the Hewlett Packard. You can go through like the largest technology companies as well. But you'll see, you know, the Yum Brands too, which has gotten crushed because China has been slow. But it's, you know, you could just look at so many different companies that have exposure, and that might be your best bet to invest in China other than doing it directly because you can get hurt. And it doesn't matter if you're an expert because a lot of experts went in there and they got burnt.
Yeah, no kidding. And the thing about, you know, some of these things that you're mentioning, though, with the Dow, you know, even if they have exposure there, what about the dollar? Does the dollar affect them? I mean, we see that the dollar has been increasing dramatically over the last several weeks, several months for that matter. And you look at a Caterpillar. I mean, why would China look to buy a Caterpillar device versus, you know, something from another country where they could possibly buy it a lot lower?
Yeah, no, that's a good point you bring up with the dollar. In terms of the quality of earnings, we're seeing that come across. We're seeing currency headwinds. You know, we're seeing that for the first time and it show up in court, at least some of the conference calls that I listen to. You know, especially like the McDonald's and stuff like that, the Procter & Gamble's and talk about currency issues, the Ford's and talk about currency issues. So it's something you have to monitor. For me, it doesn't really come down. That's not really a factor I look at. If you have a good underlying business, if you have exposure to China, it's a good investment. Are you going to worry about currency? Who knows where the dollar is going to be tomorrow? It's almost the airlines trying to figure out where oil prices are going to be. And that's why they always hedge to lock in their prices. And there's so many hedges in the futures markets that they do this. And even though oil is crushed, we all know it, but you know, you want to have that exact figure and they have forwards in place. They have the futures in place where they could do that because then you know how much you could spend. Imagine if you're not hedging oil right now and you're drilling in the Bakken and you're not hedged on oil prices. Well, you know, your whole production budget just went down a drain, right? 2014, because you were going to spend $100 million to drill all over the Bakken. And now that's when oil prices were 100 and they're 75, 78, wherever they are. So now you're like, wait a minute, we got to redo this whole thing. they'll use those markets where they'll say, okay, we're guaranteeing a price of $80. And a lot of times they do that in currency as well. So for me, I don't look at currency as a variable when I'm investing in stocks. Like, oh, currency is really going to kill these guys and stuff like that. Because usually for me, and over the last 20 years that I've been investing, it usually balances itself out somehow. And that's just me. But some people, as a trading vehicle, I think it's fantastic. But as an investor vehicle, it's something I wouldn't really look at in terms of currency when I'm buying McDonald's and how their earnings can get impacted by sales in China.
Okay. Well, let's talk about oil then, because this is kind of something interesting. You know, the oil sector, let's just kind of broad brush this for a second. This oil sector has been just decimated, generally speaking. I mean, the services, you know, your Halliburton's, your Schlumberger's, et cetera. You know, you look at the small guys like your Triangle Petroleum, your Oasis Petroleum. I mean, just ugly. This ugly. I mean, some of them have been holding up pretty well, but it seems that there is this level right now, we'll call it 75 on oil, that there's a panic button, and a lot of the oil services have been really destroyed. Now, I will let you know, just as a full disclosure, we actually picked up some options on the XLE earlier in the week, and we have a few different oils in our oil sector services in our portfolio, and they, you know, when oil just comes up ever so slightly, it's pretty good. Now, OPEC cut their price. Goldman cut their price. And is, I guess the big question is two things. First, I want to talk about oil. Is it a production or demand? Is it a supply issue? Number one. The second thing is, are there any names in there that are worthwhile? Because I know you did a lot of work in the area of, and you did some trips out there, as a matter of fact, to the Bakken and the various shale reserves where they're doing fracking, etc. So let's talk about supply demand with oil. What's your concept on that?
I think there's definitely a lot of supply in the market and not enough demand. That's why, I mean, that's kind of obvious why you're seeing prices come down here. And you have, you know, geopolitical risk, Saudi Arabia, saying whatever they want to say to make business better for them because they know they're in big trouble and we produce a lot of oil here. We're going to become the largest producer of oil in the world pretty soon. For me, the best bet for these companies is services areas. I love Halliburton here. I think that they're on, they may get taken out by GE. I think really? GE may buy them. GE is huge, is trying to become a major player in this industry. And from the areas that I looked at, it's GE oil and gas everywhere. It's a secular growing industry because it's a services industry and they help with fracking. And remember, fracking is in its infancy internationally. And the reason why they're not doing fracking like crazy is because it's almost like a roadmap. It's easier to frack in places like the Permian Basin because there's been so many holes drilled and so many maps and they have so many surveys that they know where the oil is already. Where if you start it from scratch, think about it, you're going in an area that's never been discovered before. You're going to miss 20, 30, 40, 50 times, hundreds of times. They already did that for the past 50 years in the Permian Basin. So they have the map where they're like, okay, this is where the oil is. Here's what we're doing. They have the technology to find it. Depending on where oil prices are is where they're going to drill it. Now, if you're looking overseas, they don't have that map yet, but they're getting that map. And when they do that, the service companies are going to be the biggest beneficiaries. You're looking at the top four, which is Baker Hughes, Halliburton, Weatherford, and Schlumberger. Schlumberger being the biggest, Halliburton being the second, BKI being the third, and then Weatherford. I think that GE tried to take over Weatherford before. A couple of years ago, if you notice, Weatherford just came out and said, wait a minute, our books are wrong. We have to redo our accounting. Companies just don't come out and say that. If they find out, they do it. The reason why they find out is usually because the company's looking to take them over. If you ever see a company just come out and say, our books are bad with nobody, you know, it means that somebody's looking for them and they had to open up their books, basically.
Right. In other words, they're doing like a super audit.
Yeah, super audit due diligence type of thing because, you know, let's make sure the books are okay before you take them over. And then, it, you know, they fix their books and nothing happens. So I think GE's in the acquisition market. Halliburton was just at $74. It's at $55. So I just think it's, you know, on this pullback, maybe you could buy at $60, $65 and they might accept. But if you're looking to at GE, which is a slow revenue company, and their biggest bet right now is on the industrial revolution where there's going to be sensors on everything and everything gets monitored, they think it's a $30 trillion opportunity. It's amazing. I've written about this. In terms of buying a business where you're going to be able to grow for year in, year out, for decades, it's the oil services business. I mean, we always need oil, and oil prices are going to fluctuate back and forth. But I think the oil services companies, you could pick up Halliburton here. I think it's a joke picking up a 54-ish. I would be all over that trade.
Now, what about some of the fracking companies? For example, Carbo Ceramics, symbol CRR.
Look, Carbo Ceramics is not necessarily a fracking, they're a specialty company. It's almost like a nuts and bolts play. And there's other ways like that you could frack. And that's what really killed the company at one point. This is a company I haven't even looked at the price in the past probably 3 or 4 months.
Oh, don't.
But it went all the way up and then it got crushed. And now it's
49. It was like 150 at one point.
No, but look where it was. It was like over 100 at one point.
Yeah, I'm saying it was 150, I think it was.
Yeah, the reason why is because there was a secular change in the business where they're like, okay, maybe we don't need the ceramic parts to drilling. Maybe we could use different things to drill, and other companies started taking competition from them. So if you look at carbon ceramics, it's not really a play on fracking. It's a play on the type of fracking that they do. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different because I don't think that's a great company because they have a lot of competition. It's not like Continental doesn't really have a ton of competition. They're the main guys in the Bakken. Those are the biggest guys by far. You got Pioneer and EOG, who are the biggest, you know, in Eagle Ford. So, you know, you're looking at different companies. Those are the guys if you're going to invest in fracking. Are they hedged at oil prices? Yeah, they're kind of hedged, but if they go lower, and those hedges may only be a year or two long if we stay at these prices, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But they're definitely going to have to cut back. I mean, look, you know, you got to face the facts. Oil's down, whatever, 25%. You're going to have to face the facts and say, okay, let's see where else we want to budget this, where else we could drill. And you're going to see those changes coming next year. And, you know, you may see oil prices stay at these levels maybe for a year or so. But I think they're going to go a lot higher in the long term. I really
do. What about a U.S. Silica? Are you familiar with them?
I'm not familiar with U.S. Silica.
It's a sand fracking, you know, oil.
It's a competitor then. Yeah, U.S. Silica is a competitor to Carver Ceramics. Right. So that, I bet you, I mean, if I had a look, I mean, that chart was probably a lot better.
It was.
Yeah, before the recent sell-off, because they're taking a lot of business from companies like Carver Ceramics.
Right, exactly. All right, so you mentioned a lot of stocks there. That's good stuff. I mean, that's really good things. Let's talk about the gold miners for a second. You know, one of the things that we've talked about before is these whole gold miners, they're going to be shuttering some mines. The potential, you know, as gold prices come down, there's going to be all sorts of problems with them. And there has been selling on those that has been nonstop for the last several months, but really kicked up pretty high recently. We've been trying to play the gold miners in and out very quickly, relatively quickly, on some swing trades. You know, some have been good, some have been bad. Gold, you know, has been obviously following the dollar, and any weakness in the dollar is going to push gold. And there's a lot of shorts laying on gold right now. And that's back to our discussion, what we talked about earlier about, you know, if there's a lot of shorts, the potential for a pop is dramatic if anything changes, if any of the, you know, criteria behind why they're selling and shorting change. Are there any of the gold miners that you are liking? Do you like the sector itself? I mean, small caps, large caps, anything in there?
You know what? I really liked a lot of these names about 2-3 months ago, and a lot of them hit our stops.
Yeah.
To tell you how I feel about the industry, I just invested in several private placements. So I believe that this is one of the few times you will see in this industry. If you're looking at the billionaires in this industry, the biggest players in this industry, I've been fortunate to talk to a lot of these people through Stansberry and made a lot of friends with these guys because they're good friends of the firm. They're investing and going crazy right now. They see tremendous opportunity, and make no mistake, they've gotten crushed and destroyed. These are pure oil guys. I mean, not pure oil guys, pure resource guys, and they've gotten nailed, but they're seeing opportunities that they haven't seen since the early 90s where you could pick up assets for pennies on the dollar and everything's getting nailed. Gold prices, I think the market might be a little weak for at least a few more years, but if you have a 5-year time horizon and picking up some of your favorite stocks, I'm seeing junior miners. These are companies that have really good properties that don't generate revenue. They're trading under cash. You know, you've never really seen that market. If you want to compare that to, you know, a market in the U.S., that's the credit crisis where companies were trading under cash. It didn't make sense. Right now, I think we're going to look at the gold market and say the gold market right now is similar to January 2009, where a lot of experts said it's one of the best opportunities to buy stocks. And they were right. But over the next 3 months, they got destroyed, and the S&P 500 came down, and then it hit the ultimate bottom. And even if you invested in January 2009, you're still up tremendously. But if you invested in March 2009, you're up a lot more, up probably 200% on any market you pick it in the U.S. I think we're going to look back and say this is one of the few opportunities. Like, I can't believe where stocks are trading. But you're still going to see a lot of pressure. What are the tells that you'll see? You'll see acquisitions. You're not seeing acquisitions. You're still seeing
because nobody has money.
The biggest companies in the world invested so much, they're still writing assets off. So they're not looking to expand and stuff like that. So I think it's a great opportunity.
Because it's very, very painful. I look at a Paulson. He must be getting his butt whipped hard on that gold fund and the funds that he have that are backed by gold.
I've learned through like my 20 years where I like Paulson. I don't really, you know, I'll call out perma bears. You know what I mean? Because I hate the fact that, you know, they pound their chest and say they're right and they've been so wrong. Has Paulson been wrong? He's been wrong, but you know, I think we've all been wrong from time to time too. I know David Heinhorn's been invested heavily in gold. There's a lot of people invested heavily in gold. A lot of good names. It's just been a market that it looked like it was a huge buy not too long ago, forming triple bottoms and stuff like that. And you know, now we broke through. It's kind of like, all right, everyone's got to get out. But I can tell you something too. What I'm learning about in the industry right now, one is there's tax laws into effect here. There's 3-year carrybacks in Canada where, you know, 3 years you can carry back those losses, and a lot of people are selling to get those tax breaks. And right at the last, if you look at 3 years, that was 2011 when it was the biggest boom market. So you're seeing like forced selling in this market. You're seeing funds go out of business. I'm seeing newsletters go out of business, which is forced selling on these stocks. So that does being manipulated. But when you see that, it's almost like, you know, 2009 when you saw, you know, GE at 5 and Bank of America at 3. Everyone's dumping everything right now. You have to wait for that process to play out. I think it's almost done playing out. It should be done playing out by the end of this year, which leaves you late December, maybe January, to really start picking away at some of these stocks. But the reason why you're seeing some of these things get nailed is because people, there's redemptions everywhere. Everyone's like, I'm out and that's it. And that usually creates the ultimate bottom where you can make huge, huge gains.
Now, one of the things, let's talk about a scenario that, let's say that it plays out the way you're talking about. And let's talk about how to actually technically deal with this. So one of the things you could do if you don't know where the bottom is, and let's say, you know, you have a portfolio that you want to allocate. Let's just use $10,000 as a number, okay? Well, one of the things you could do is you could start hitting those stocks now, whether you want to go into a broad-based situation like a GDX or a GDXJ, the junior gold miners, in an ETF, or if you want to buy some of the stocks themselves, you could start adding small positions, very small positions. This way, you know, if it goes down a little bit more, fine, you average down a little bit, if this is something that you want to do, by the way. And then as time goes on, add to that position. You know, if it moves up and it breaks out, well, you have some in there already. Now you're not going to be like, oh, I didn't get it, forget it, I'm not buying. Because what happens a lot of times is emotions will take over and you'll be like, wait, it broke out. Maybe I'll wait for it to come back. And then it runs away from you. You know what I'm saying? So what you could do is at least you have a position in there.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And then you can add to it. Now, if the thing doesn't play out right, it comes down a little bit. Again, if you're committed to it and you say, you know what, this thing is still flushing down, you can buy a little bit more, hold on to it, buy a little bit more. If it moves up a little bit, and if it does eventually break out, then you put your position on fully. But this way, you kind of averaged it a little bit and got yourself in, because there's a lot of emotion and mental play that goes on with this whole thing. So if you're not a professional that doesn't have any feeling about this at all, which most individuals are not that type, at least you can get yourself acclimated to being in it a little bit. And if it's something that works out, then hey, you know what? That's a good thing. And if it doesn't, you know, right away, you're still better off because you've been buying and lowering your basis down on it. What are your thoughts? Good idea?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. You know, I would just wait to the end of the year before you do that. But I love the trading strategy where, you know, people, I think, want to take full positions all the time. And, you know, it's not really the right way to trade. You want to be able to build into a position over time. And when you do that, it gives you good peace of mind, because if the stock runs up, yeah, you're a little mad, but you still own it. And if you took a full position and say, God forbid, there's a terrorist attack or some market force you don't know about that, you know, whatever happens, like say if you took a position in oil and look what happened to oil and you bought Continental Resources, which is a good stock, you're down 20% before you know it. Where instead of you taking small positions, now you're building it. You'd still be down. Oil got crushed, but your cost base is a lot lower. And now, you know, you rode out this downturn, and you're getting it at a good price where you can let it run a lot higher. So I love that trading strategy in terms of, you know, scaling into your stocks and you know, adding as you're going down a little bit. And also when your full position's there or you see it break out, of course, you could add to your position there too. But I really don't like taking full positions. I try to take half positions in my newsletters when I'm talking to a lot of different people. But that's the way I like to do it. It's just like, you know, I would go in even at 4 or 5 different stages where I'm going to get into position. That's what I do for my personal account.
So what about, let's wrap it up with some of maybe your favorite small cap ideas.
You know what? There's a huge secular change going on in technology. If you're looking at Cisco, they're talking about the Internet of Everything. If you look at Qualcomm, that's a big trend for them. And you look at Qualcomm's numbers, they were terrible. They
terrible numbers. Awful.
Awful. If you're looking at Cisco, 66% of their business is routers and switchers, and that's barely growing. I think it's like 0%. But they're talking about connectivity and devices. The connectivity market is a monster market. They're predicting right now where there's 8 billion devices connected, not just phones and tablets. We're talking about appliances, thermostats, cars. Anything that's electrical, anything that's plugged in is going to be connected to the internet that you can control. They're expecting that to go to 50 billion devices by 2020. okay, 2020 is not that far away. Now, even if they're wrong and it's half that, it's still a huge, huge growth market. And what you're seeing is the companies that make components for those are doing great. If you look at a Skyworks Solutions and pull up a chart on that one, I think Nuance, we'll stay with Skyworks for a minute. Skyworks is actually saying they're
What's the symbol? S-K-Y?
S-W-K-S.
S-W-K-S, right. Sealed with a kiss.
Yes.
So they make don't they make the antenna arrays?
They make a whole bunch of chips, a whole bunch of the technology that goes behind. They're in the iPhone, they're in the Androids, they're in Google, all these companies. But they're one of the biggest companies that are in all the hottest products, even appliances. And they're saying how big, actually in their conference call, the Internet of Everything is. It's a monster trend, but it's not going to be so big for Qualcomm or Cisco because they're monster companies. When you're generating like $10, $20, $30 billion just in that division, you know, it's huge. But when you're looking at Skyworks, I mean, generating, you know, a few billion dollars is going to move the needle. And that's what you're seeing. If you pull up like a 2-year chart in this company, they're benefiting tremendously. Demand's off the charts for these little chip companies. Companies like Nuance Communications, I think you can get a discount. Icon's a big owner in there. If you look at the chart, probably not too good, but they do all the voice recognition software behind Siri. Voice recognition software is going to be huge in every car and a lot of these connected devices where you can just talk to them and walk into your house and say, hey, turn on the coffee, turn on this. Nuance makes the chips. They supply that technology. So instead of investing in these big companies like the GEs who are talking about industrial revolution and how these sensors are tracking everything, this way they can improve productivity, invest in the companies that make the sensors. Because those are the ones that are going to be the biggest beneficiaries.
I'll give you one. Can I give you one that maybe, sure. You know, people like the GoPro, the concept and all that, whether or not it's a good company or not. But, you know, look at the cameras and all that. And who carries a camera? By the way, Canon and those companies are suffering dramatically. You know why? Well, who needs a camera anymore? You got an iPhone, you got a Samsung device, you got an Android device. They have great cameras on them. Who needs it? More pictures being taken today and videos than ever. What about a company like Ambarella?
Yes, AMBA. I'm very familiar with that. The chart, I mean, if you look at it on a technical level, what symbol do you have there?
AMBA. It's perfect.
Yeah, AMBA. It's through the roof. It's near its 52-week high. And I've been following this company since like 27, hoping it go down. It keeps going higher. Again, another company that's behind the GoPros, and you're seeing, I mean, look at GoPro's numbers. Forget about the valuation of it and buying GoPro because I think it's really, really high. But, I mean, demand's off the charts for those cameras. So as long as you're selling those cameras, these are the guys that make the chips behind those cameras. So, you know, again, that's one way of looking at investing, how I look at small and mid-cap investments where, you know, you look at Skyworks, it's not a small cap, it's a mid-cap. And even this company, Ambarella, it has a $1.4 billion market cap. These are the companies that will benefit so much more from these secular trends that are taking place. These trends are going to happen. It's happening right now. But you have the big guys with the speakers, the Ciscos and everything, saying this is coming, this is here. From a stock perspective, it's so hard to move the needle from those companies because their core businesses aren't growing. Why don't you invest in the smaller companies that have a lot more exposure to these growing industries? That's where we're making the most money in small and mid-cap stocks. If you're looking one last company for a conservative recommendation, which I know you're going to fall asleep, if you own Coca-Cola, McDonald's, Procter & Gamble, I would sell every one of them and put all your money into AT&T if you own those things.
AT&T.
AT&T is going. They're going to take over DirecTV, which gives them a growth component. You're talking about a higher yield. You're looking at a company where they're not even subsidizing the iPhone anymore. You have to pay for the new iPhone.
All about that. By the way, announcement for everybody.
The next contract and everything.
I went back and forth on the next contract, and I went back and forth. It's basically like leasing a car is what you're doing there.
Exactly. So they changed their policy where, okay, you know, it's not that I've been a customer for AT&T for 10 years, and here comes my 2-year agreement.
Yep.
They don't know. It's basically like they're going to make you pay for that phone. So you're looking at a model there. You look at DirecTV, which is a company that's growing on the top and bottom line. They're going to take over. The synergies are going to be amazing. And then you get a 5% yield, which is important because people are looking at McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Procter & Gamble saying, wow, look at those yields. They're great and they're good businesses, but they're not growing. They're having trouble growing. Even if you look at a Coca-Cola or even a McDonald's, which secular changes are taking place, right? No, people don't really take their kids to McDonald's anymore. They know it's bad. Everyone's going organic now and stuff. And Coca-Cola, you know, how many laws are coming out? You can't have large sodas anymore. Even in New York, you have to get smaller sodas. So you're looking at changes in those businesses where I don't just look at yield when you're buying a company if you're a conservative investor. You have to have some kind of growth there. The reason why people are rich buying McDonald's isn't because of the yield. It's because of compounding that yield along with compounding those capital gains, which you've done over the past 20, 30 years. If I'm looking at a 20-year investment, I don't see McDonald's growing much, and maybe collect a dividend where I see AT&T becoming huge. I think this is a great deal for them. You wonder why all the cable companies are coming out and saying this deal's not fair. Don't let it happen. It is going to happen. So now you have a high-yielding stock with a growth component, and it's a stock, if you pull up a two-year chart, AT&T's been up 3% over the past 2 years. The S&P 500 has been up 45%. So I like that. I like that company right now as a conservative investment.
I don't.
That I went to AT&T and they did that to me recently. I just bought the new iPhone.
Let me say this. I do agree with AT&T as a conservative investment. Let's just say that. I'll go there. I have no problem with that. You know, think about this for a second. You know, you have a McDonald's that misses, a Starbucks that misses and all that. Starbucks has climbed right back up to the top already.
Starbucks is different, though. They have China. They're investing in China. They have a growth component. We're not talking
tell you
about
something.
Starbucks.
I feel bad socially and personally about the fact that China is now going to have to drink this crap coffee. It's burnt, nasty coffee. They have such great stuff over there, great tea, great organic. And now they got this. I mean, unfortunately, we push our Western ways, and then everybody kind of abides by it. I don't know if you're a Starbucks fan.
No, I'm a Starbucks fan. I know where this rant's going. I hear you. In terms, you don't compare Starbucks to AT&T, though. Starbucks is a different company. You compare the Procter's Gamble and McDonald's, Coca-Cola's AT&T. That's what I'm saying. If you're going to – it's a conservative portfolio. If you have those stocks, you're better off owning AT&T. Starbucks is a growth company. I mean, they have a half the market cap of AT&T, much less. What is it? It's $60 billion market cap. But – Starbucks is different. They have a 1%, 1.5% yield. Where you're looking at 5%.
I'm with you on this. I got you. We got to wrap this up a little bit. Frank Curzio from Frank Curzio Inc. is with us today, and you'll hear more about a lot of things that'll be coming out in the next couple of weeks about some things that are going on. His new podcast that'll be coming up next Wednesday. All the things and how to get in touch with him, etc. We'll put the links on the show notes for this particular podcast on the website on disciplineinvestor.com. The new Wall Street Unplugged, right? Wall Street Unplugged.
And guys, I'm going to let you know everything that I'm doing on that podcast. I've been approached by a lot of very, very surprising. I mean that. Probably 10 of the top 12 publishers, financial publishers, reached out for me to write newsletters to them, and I just went to go see all of them. I told them, don't make me an offer because I don't know what I'm doing, because I may maybe at that time to start my own company, and I'm really debating it. So I'm going to let everybody know that on my Wall Street Unplugged podcast. So if you guys want to tune in, that'd be fantastic.
And here's a special for you. Anybody that's listening to the show right now, you can listen to Wall Street Unplugged at no cost.
At no cost.
How do you like that? Great.
That's perfect. Yeah, no cause for now and forever.
And we'll tell you about some other things that are coming up. Stay tuned for some information. Also, you'll find out about Curzio and his podcast, his newsletters, and some other things that I'm not going to tip my hat to right now that I know about that are going to be very important for you to listen to. Anyway, thanks, Frank Curzio. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, man. You're the best.
All right, see ya. Bye-bye. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this show. Lots of information, lots of good stocks. Take a look at all the information that we talked about on this over at the show notes on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And, of course, you'll be able to find out more about what's happening with Frank as time goes by. Make sure to listen to his podcast coming up this week, as he mentioned. And if you have any questions, of course, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next week. And, in fact, Tuesday we have a TradeStation Tuesdays coming up. Make sure to register. Just look up TradeStation Stocks and ETF Update. You can go there Tuesday at 11 o'clock in the morning. And next week, we have John Markman coming up. And we also have a special guest from the REIT sector, Real Estate Investment Trust, finding out more about the world of real estate, what's going on there, and lots more to cover. Thanks again for joining me. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.